My name's Lucy, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the second annual Downtown Reading Old Timers Weekend, Sunday the 12th of April, 2015. This group wishes no negative atmosphere. Please respect this. Phones on silent, no sweets or chewing gum, no texting and no electronic cigarettes. Refreshments will be in the refectory behind us in the main building. And Bernard's going to read the preamble.
My name's Bernard, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, and they may solve their common problem, help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting for our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. 10 minutes left.
Thanks, Bernard. Right, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born this way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us explained, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. That we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Three, that God could and would if he were sought. There are no more experienced alcoholics in AA than our 11 old-timers speaking who know how this event was nearly a non-event. People have stepped up with support at unexpected moments, like Keith, the secretary, and Ben, the telephone officer of TVI, with many others circulating flyers, and Richard, secretary of Monday Night in Reading, providing the recording equipment, and Big Tom and his wife Dawn with the catering. It is called Indie because we are totally independent from Intergroup, wholly funded by the Friday and Saturday AA meetings at Watlington House. Before the moment's silence, I'm going to say 26 names of those no longer with us. Sadly, this has grown from this time last year. It is sad to say that one of the original old-timers, Maura O'Sullivan, invited to share at the first event last year, could not due to ill health. She sadly passed away and was buried in December. Some of us attended the funeral service. She attended this event last year only for 10 minutes due to the pain she was experiencing, but we are pleased she could join us. So Maura is now at a meeting with Tom G, Walter, Jesse, Jimmy A, Ron G, MS John, SAS Angry John, Babs, Michael Kevin, Fireman Colin, Tall Mark, Taxi Gary, Wee Adam, Martin the Monk, Lockkeeper Joe, Young Maidenhead Mark, America John, Vera from Newbury, Melvin, Sheila from Bracknell, Eve of Hendy, Barry of Wantage, Pat of Twyford, Guardsman John, and Iris Archie. These are just a few names, so many more are not mentioned. It is good to say that their message is still alive and living in meetings they started decades ago that carries the message to the still suffering alcoholic. This is AA today, sitting in an old tin hut, the urn is on, chatter in the kitchen, smokers no longer creating the smoke-filled rooms, thankfully, smokers outside, others sitting, waiting in the meeting, going to start on time. Bill Wilson wrote in the AA Comes of Age, page 220, AA's claim, any alcoholic who continuously works the AA program has a better than 3-to-1 chance of staying sober for their lifetime. Our old timers are living proof to Bill's testament, which Dennis is recording. Copies will be available in a couple of weeks at minimum costs and will be given to speakers. The cost of this event has been covered by members of the Friday and Saturday Watlington House AA meetings. Please bear this in mind at Tradition 7 and fold your change into the pot. Our old-timers committee is very young in AA. Thomas, 3 years. Dennis, 2 years. James, 2 years. David, 3 years. Neil, 7 months. Big Tom, 5 years. So, I would now like to introduce our first old-timer, Bernard from Reading, who's, was your first meeting Watlington House, at Watlington House?
It was, Lucy.
And I think Tommy G was your first old timer you came across, who came to see you at Fairmark.
It was Lucy.
Right, over to you, Bernard.
My name is Bernard. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm. Is that all right, Thomas? Yeah. And can the people standing at the back, can you hear me? Okay. My first meeting, I was extremely more nervous than what I am now. And I often, when we have a moment's silence,
My heart goes out for that poor. I was 26 when I got sober, and I often think about some poor lad who's got a young family or a girl, you know, and you've got to walk through a doorway, and you've got to walk in and face yourself, and you've got all this history of being someone that your actions don't associate with the nervousness that you feel coming into a meeting, and you're making a lot of noise moving that chair. And seriously, and I think for any of us, whether you know, whether you go to your first AA meeting and a coach booking, or there comes that initial point when you've got to walk in yourself, you've got to do it for yourself, and it's not easy, is it? You know, and we're in the hall to Wallington House, and the actual building behind us is where, in the rectory, where I went to my first meeting, and I walked down the stairs, and like it's what Lucy just read, you know, I walked into the little rectory, and there was all the mist, you know, the steam coming from the urn, and out walked this little Scottish woman, and she turned around and she said to me, "Right, you little so-and-so, I don't want you kicking up from performing down here like I've seen you doing." And I was really nervous, and it really frightened me. And but I didn't bolt it. I stood there, and she actually said to me that she'd seen me. I'd been sleeping rough, and you go up the social to sign on, and you get, you know, no fixed abode, and they give you a few quid or whatever. I can't remember now what they'd done, but it, you know, it's all that dreadful. Like Caroline said yesterday, you know, there was no fun in the drinking at the end. You know, as Walter used to say, one of that, you know, even on a beautiful morning like this, you know, you're alcoholic and you drink and you wake up, and the first thing you do, you curse your existence, don't you? The drink don't work no more, and all the other madness doesn't work. And but there was something about Jesse that touched my heart, and I really do think it was the sincerity of the woman, and I think she really had the no-nonsense approach. And I sat there in the meeting, and I felt like, you know, it's I can understand why these people get emotional yesterday sitting up here, you know, because I think in them early days of AA, I got really, people just remembering my name, Bernard, really got to me, you know. I was one of them people very, once I put the drink down and I was left with myself, I was extremely nervous, terrified of my own skin. I had no idea whether I'd just said something to you, or whether I'd imagined it. All my communication, and, you know, things like that had gone. And, you know, and I see it now with newcomers, you know, every time you get a bit of peace or you sit still, isn't it? You know, one thing that used to follow me, with like how we're sitting here now today, is I connect straight back to my father's funeral. He had a big Irish funeral, and I was with my uncle at 6 o'clock in the morning, slapping each other, trying to sober each other up. And I followed my father's coffin out. I was the oldest son, and I was convinced everyone thought that the wrong one was in the box, you know, like an alcoholic thinking, isn't it, you know? And it wasn't 2 years later that I got sober that quite a few people turned around and said, "Actually, see me how I was." All right, David. And that's so AA, isn't it? I've lost the moment. I was at my father's funeral, and it's like now this feeling sitting here now, and people said to me afterwards that it was heartbreaking to see who I was following my father's grave out, you know. And I after that point, I was 21. I never had the, you know, the drink never really worked. I was always in I always had a complicated mind. I was always in turmoil. I could always, you know, I knew that if I got suited up or got, I could always attract love, but I always hurt people that ever tried to love me, you know. And And this is not as easy as you think sitting up here, you know, because you're tuning in. I didn't think I was going to be speaking first off, you know, and then to come up here, and I don't even know what time we started. Getting back to the emotions and the feelings, isn't it? When you sober up, and like I said, and all I can remember was that feeling of sincerity. And I think without strong sponsorship, without people loving you, and you don't keep that sincerity, I think you're going to a blackguard. I think the rogue kicks in. I think you've got to, you see it now, you see people coming into meetings, and they got to give it the big one. You know, they've got to make out they've been the gangster, they've been this and everything. I was really frightened. You know? I had the reputation. Like I said, you know, I was one of these lads, I come from a, I'm not going to go into all that, but you know, but I knew the difference between right and wrong. I can't say, some of the worst things I'd done was in the pursuit of getting a drink. You know, destroying people's confidence, just, you know, like, just, you know, something simple like, I don't know, just humiliating someone, leaving someone standing on a street corner and I couldn't be bothered to go and meet her. You know, showing off and just totally indifference to people's feelings. And I think, I honestly, it's not the word I think, I was told to feel when I come in. What are you feeling? And I felt dread. I couldn't trust myself. I had no idea what my accent was. I had no idea, like if I was with, whatever I was, I'd fitted in with what they were. You know, I'm just as likely to come out and say, absolutely. Or bucket, you know, and it's that my past troubled me very much. And if people had just said to me, Bernard, you're 26, come into the meetings, you're a good looking fella, you've got a little bit going for you, and that's all you got to do, twice a week, sit in the meetings and don't drink, I'd have had to go away, because I couldn't live with myself. You know, it was my thinking and not my drinking. When people said to me, did you pay more than money for your drinking, at 26, and where I was coming from, right, I could so identify with that. You with me? You know, all them hours, like sleeping, you know, I've spoken with Lucy a few times, you know. I'd have money, and I'd be sleeping under a bridges with the bottles of cider, watching the train shooting past, and, you know, that's how I used to talk to people. They'd be on a train shooting past, and I'd be there drinking. There was no anyone there anymore, you know. And getting back to the meetings, you know, my first meeting, I was picked up by Tommy G, God bless his soul, and he looked like a spiv out of Dad's army. And the first thing I remember was coming out of the hospital, and he dropped the child lock on the car. And like a lot of us, our unsavory background, I thought, that's it now. I'm, you know, past tense here now, you know. And going into a meeting, it was a hall much like this. And it's a strange feeling, isn't it, when you're a newcomer, because it's just overwhelming, isn't it? You've got people all your life walking away from you, the mother closing the curtains, phoning the police, you know, court injunctions was regular, howling at the moon. And I can remember Tommy G giving me a packet of fags. I was smoking that time, right? And I remember thinking, I better settle this up because I might need this AA. And I honestly, where I didn't know how to talk to people, I thought it was like school. I thought because I was a Looney Tune on a Friday, I went to the Looney Tune meeting, you know, and all the headers were there. You with me? We went out to this Fairmount Hospital, the Nuthouse, and Elvis was around at times, they're still alive, right? And Mick the Grinder was in there, right? We'd all been sleeping rough and ready, you know, Donegal Gardens and the Rocks and everything like that. So it was like a reunion, you know, we're all sitting there, how are you doing that, you know, and it was like, God forbid, you know. Anyway, someone slipped in some sleepers into the meeting. You know, it was supposed to be drug free, you know. And the AA got thrown out of the hospital. And Tommy G came out to me and he said to me, "Did you snake the pills in?" Right? And I thought, that's me, finished. People stopped believing. Are you looking out there for someone, Thomas? You make me nervous. Look at me. Forget them. And the fact that Tommy G believed me, and I said, "No, Tom, I didn't do it. I didn't take him in there," it was such a big thing for me. Really big thing, you know? And I was fortunate that the fact little things fell into place. I realised, like, my head was gone. I knew that. What was with me? I would go out and I would do things. And then I'd sober up, and I couldn't live with the... Robert. I couldn't live with the consequences of... I couldn't live with the consequences of my actions, you know. Anyway, what troubled me was the fact that, you know, when you're young, you're chasing a reputation and you want to be somebody or whatever. Well, when I'd got to a point where, like, I'd had a lot of things going for me, and I couldn't live with the fact that the nutters thought I was a bigger nutter than them. I'd overtaken and I'd arrived at a point of destination that I couldn't live up to. And I was very lonely. Like it says in our literature, you know, I was tortured by loneliness, you know, because everyone was going by my actions and by what they looked at. And I didn't know how to get out what was inside me, you know. And when Tommy G believed me that I didn't take the pills into the hospital, you know, and I think what's really important, I really wanted these people's respect. There's names being read here today, and I'm not just saying this out of blackguard, you know. I would have followed them old timers into hell. Seriously, I can remember, like, when you've been sleeping rough and you're a disgrace and you're a latchico and you're no good for nothingness, and all you've ever done is that people have tried to love you. And, you know, I remember one Christmas I found my mum up and she said to me, "Why don't you just chuck yourself in the river?" You know, and I wasn't even raging. I was genuine, you know. It was like, and you know, and I remember I was in that rectory over there one night and I was scared, really frightened, you know, and like I said, my head was gone. And it was like a jigsaw, all the pieces was there. I'd upset a lot of people. I could see a recovery for everyone else, but I couldn't see it for myself. And this fella come out to me, Jimmy A. And like I said, I couldn't get over people remembering my name. That really got to me. I'm like, "Bernard, how are you? How are you getting on with this and that, you know?" And people remembering things. And he put his arm around my shoulder. And he said to me, "All you need, son's a bit of confidence." I tell you what, I didn't like feeling emotions, right? And it was like that, you know. And he gave me a lift home. And it's that, I'm sober today because people give me time of day when no one, they believed in me that I was an alcoholic. When I said I was an alcoholic, it was like, for me, it was a step up. It wasn't, like, they said to me, "Bernard, you're an alcoholic, but now you've got to go away for 5 years, do your time, and come back, and you get sober." I'd have took it, because it put right what was wrong with me. You know, it was like, I wasn't troubled by the madness and things like that. It was that, I couldn't handle the sincerity of me. I couldn't, like Caroline said yesterday, I couldn't handle hurting people. You know, I've gone to extremes over, you know, going too far, hurting people, thinking, "Oh, might me kill this kind side of me," you know, but it didn't work. And the wonderful thing about AA back then was, you know, like, you know, the old times, like, they sat me down and they told me what alcoholism was. You know, my head was gone. You know, they loved me long enough for me to turn around and sit myself. I can remember first time I was going, you know, it's different nowadays. I can remember when I was coming up to do my first chair ever, and it was like getting pulled by the old, you know, like being taken for an interrogation. "Have you done any drugs?" "No." "Have you done this?" "No, no, no. You've not taken a drink?" "No, no." You know, he said, "Right, you know, you're not going to tell lies when you do your chair?" "No." And when I'd done my first chair, the thing that I got out of it was I couldn't believe how indifferent I was to myself. I was just matter of fact. Didn't care. I didn't exist. And I see people, and what frightened me was the effect of my indifference about myself and the response I got back from people off the floor. And it's like, Jimmy A used to say, "If you make them laugh, they come back." And like, there I am doing a chair, and he's out there winking at me and doing things like that, you know, not... Like, I'm very much, it's funny really, how I am today and how I am around people, I really do see it's Walter, Tommy G, Jimmy A, it's all the mixtures of these strong characters that I find coming out of me in my message. And I just think it's sad that I mention these fellas' names and there's nothing of them that you can play anymore, you know. I mean, I had no intentions of sitting up here today, you know, it's the first speaker hasn't made it. and I'm thrown in, and I'm very self-conscious of this. I see people yesterday getting very emotional, getting very upset, because how does someone that's 26 in a nut house, no fixed abode, you know, I'm not one of these people who want to go back into it, but, you know, and I'm sitting up here, and you know, next month I'm coming up to 33 years sober, you know, and it's strange, I feel a lot younger in my heart and in my outlook on life today than what I did when I came in my 20s. I didn't think that you could get away with it all. I did not believe that there was really this freedom, but I loved the people in AA. I can remember going up to Scotland for the Blue Bonnets. It must have been 83, and I was at Jimmy A and all that, right? And I was this sort of head case, right? But I couldn't eat in front of people, you know, like, and we'd gone into this big hotel, and one of the fellas, he was at home in it, you know, a bit of a poser, you know, play acting, giving all the big and. And Jimmy A was like this real character around this area, and he was mad about Errol Flynn, right? And if someone said to me, what would you like to do, one thing in AA, Bernard, before your time's up? I'd love to be able to do what Jimmy gave me. Because we're up there, I was at this stage where I was apologising for breathing. You know, I had no confidence in talking, and all right, you know, I got this crazy past that I was struggling with, you know, I don't want to go back into it, there's no point. And we're in this place, and he's there, Jimmy, and he's got the suit on, and I've got the jean jacket, much the same, like, no, kickers on the, I ain't got the jean jacket on now, but, and I wanted to hide. And he's there, and he's putting his suit on, and he was, you know, the women loved him and everything like that. He was a right play actor, Jimmy, great, good bloke, God bless his soul. And we're walking down these stairs, I don't know whether Robert knows the building or not, but it was like a sort of place, and we were walking down these stairs, and it was like I was walking through a minefield, you know, I didn't want people looking at me, and he was mad about Errol Flynn, muting on about me, right, and he's pulled his tie down like that, and he's thrown it over his shoulder, right, and he's having this imaginary sword fight, like, and he made me laugh. And I'm not joking, right, it really, really, because he made me laugh like now, I fell in love, and I know what love is from one alcoholic to another. It's not this, oh, you're super nice or anything like that. It's actually sometimes taking a risk, isn't it? Making yourself look stupid just to put someone else at ease, you know? We sat down there and I heard tapes, you know, I remember one of the most prized possessions was given me was a tape from this fella called Red Paddy. He'd spoken a year before at the Blue Bonnets. It was like a pride join, and someone gave me a Jack Brennan tape, because I couldn't trust people, but I could trust what I heard, right? And my sponsor took me back to his house, and he says to me, I'm taking you upstairs. And I didn't know what he was on about. I didn't know, and he said to me, you're going to listen. This is a bit, James, that you should listen to. He took me upstairs. And the benefit, James has arrived. And he put me in his room. And bear in mind, it's about 82, 83. It was all cassettes and stereos were quite new at this time, right? And he said to me, you're not coming down till you've listened to both sides of this tape. And, you know, it's awful, isn't it? You sit down and I couldn't relax. Anyway, and I listened to this tape, Jack Brennan. And even to this day, I can still listen to that. And it's. I honestly say to people, you've got to fall in love with AA, the warts and all, everything about it. You know, you fall in love with AA. You don't have to. I honestly feel the gratitude is always there. You know, it's like earlier this morning, I was talking to Thomas when the first speaker didn't turn up. I didn't want to do this, but it'd be false pride not to jump in. You know, that's not the way of things. And coming down into his house, I mean, I went round to Thomas's house the other day, and I'm still, all the things that I thought when I'd get sober, I thought I was going to turn into Gandhi. I really did. I fell in love with this. I thought I'd be going around hugging people, putting petals down and all sorts of things. And but like it says about our about my past, you know, I can sit down there. There are times when people think that I can be tough. But I'm only ever say tough with someone because I know I've got it. Because it was what they'd done to me. They were tough with me. Not to humiliate me. they were tough for me to make sure I clocked in. And once I clocked in, then they put the arm around the shoulder and that, you know, and, you know, things like saying, you're doing well, son. And I remember there was, I think, I'm sorry for picking on you, Robert, but I think you might know the other, Scots John. He used to go around with Wee Adam, his little, you know the fellow I mean? Right, my background's Irish, right, and thank God for the preamble, because I'd have never stayed in there if it wasn't for the preamble. I thought, well, for those thinking, you know, it was a very strange time in the 80s, you know, to try and explain now. And I've gone into this meeting, and I don't like a lot of attention. I don't like the spotlight, because I'm more of a joker. I want to make someone laugh, and, you know, I'm not, you know. And I've walked into the English Martyrs room one on the big book meeting, and Anna, Scotch John's come over, and he had this skinhead haircut, and he's come up to me, right, and he always used to have this grief about Scotland coming down and wrecking Wembley at 76, and I used to try and hide, I used to try and get out of the situation by saying, well, I'm half Irish, and, you know, and he's come up to me, and Wee Adam was sat over there, and he says to me, how long you been sober? Oh, I said, oh, please, John, give us a break, man, I don't need this. You know, the head was full on. I was running around with the yacht. I was trying to sort my life out. I'm praying for people that I want to knock the seven bells shining out of. And at the same time, I'm getting this like that, and I'm praying, and I'm running around with the yacht. And he says to me, how long have you been sober? Oh, I thought, do I give the cliche? Do I say, just for today? I said, I don't need this job. And he turned around, and he looked me in his eyes, right? And he said to me, you're coming up for a year sober, aren't you? Talk about knocking out, yeah. I mean, me and him, two completely different backgrounds on the sectarian thing. Everything about us was opposing each other and everything like that. And he looked me in the eyes, and he knew that I was coming up for a year sober, right? And little Adam started laughing, right? And that's what's kept me sober. People touching into me, you know? It's you know, I don't mean this to be controversial. I never chased a woman like I chased a drink. Never. Women are easy, aren't they? Do you know, I don't mean in that, sorry, I don't mean in that sense, you know what I mean? I mean, like, you know, but when the pressure's on to get a drink, it's not always that easy to get a drink, is it, you know? And then coming into AA, I loved it. I loved it when they said AA stood for all without a choose. I mean, there's names here to people I could give you. You see, not everyone, like Fireman Colin. He came out to me, he was the secretary down there, and he was telling me he was driving, you know, they made me laugh. He says to me, he was in the RAF, and he'd been working out there, he knew how to speak the Chinese lingo, he'd done all that kind of work for the things, everything like that. And his rock bottom was, he was driving a fire engine out of, I don't know, Uxbridge Fire Station, so he got up the M4, got steamed up and plowed off the motorway, went into a field, and, you know, he got bounced out, you know. And I think what people were showing me then, they were giving me come to terms with the humiliation of being an alcoholic, isn't it? My thing for me was, like I said, I could handle myself, I could look after myself, I got the reputation for myself, right, and then my bottle went. I couldn't understand. If you put it on a gauge to 10, I'd say 2% where I was the character or whatever, and then I had 8/10 of being terrorised of what the world that I was living in. I was absolute, and my bottle had gone, and I was a coward. And the humiliation for me to say that I was a coward. I was in the food line out. This bloke walked up to me, and he, to cut long story short, and he just tipped the end of my nose, and he said to me, he said, you're not even worth a slap. And I didn't have to look after myself no more. I was broke. I was complete. I was, what, 25, 26? I was broke. And you come into AA, you know, and you get people like Fireman Colin, or you get, you know, and people turn and say, son, it's a spiritual malady. You know, it clicked. It made sense, you know what I mean? And then sitting down and looking at my past and looking at it, what can we say? What can I really say, you know? I had a little daughter that I didn't want people to know that I had, because I come from a good background. It was a crazy background, but I was given good values. I knew that as a father, you've got a responsibility, and I knew it wasn't like I had to be taught these things. I knew I wasn't doing what was the I had been trained, for want of a word, and I wasn't functioning as what I was trained. So that was tormenting me, you know? I can remember going into a meeting, and said there were some strong characters at the time. I think what they do, they were making sure I didn't get pink cloud up, and make sure that I was going to think, like, in a minute now, someone's going to come out and give me a big bouquet of flowers, and there's going to be a limo, and a Bernard's just left the building, and all that, you know, dreaming dreams, you know. And I had a little girl about 18 months old, and my mother, actually, how am I doing for time? All right, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, my mother was going to, sorry, I'm going to jump back a bit now. My mother was the person who 12-stepped me, and she was in the kitchen, and she had her back to the door. My two brothers wanted to give me a bit of intensive care treatment, and she's going to me, Bernard, you're an alcoholic. I couldn't tell my own mother. I was too scared to walk down the road to go to an AA meeting. I couldn't do it. And I was almost like, first day back, it was worse than going to, you know. And like I said, my mother 12-stepped me, and my mother 12-stepped me, and I was too scared to go. And like I said, I ended up Fairmont, and Tommy 12-stepped me. And getting back to my daughter, that was it. Sorry. My mother 12-stepped me, and she said to me, and this sounds a bit, now, I was sleeping rough, I was skinny, I'd given the ghost up, honestly. You know, like some days today now, I don't say things because people think you're trying to be unique, special, and different. I was in a bad way. You know, seriously, I'd given the ghost up. And my mother said to me, Bernard, can you do one day where you don't take a drink for Sarah? This is my daughter. And so I can say that you're an alcoholic. Anyway, so I went off to, cut a long story short, don't move anyone for a moment, right? And they got hold of me, the lads. And you know when you fall in love with someone, don't you? You know, and like I said, I'd have followed these blokes into hell. I was a mug, you could fool me. Give me 3 or 4 pints in a pub and say to me, Bernie so-and-so's over there, he's doing so. I'd follow you in. I was an awful, things I've done on violence, just on people-pleasing. Just say, you know, just say, I believe you. Get me stained up, I'm in with you. Because I don't know how to say, he used to say to me, he who hasn't learned to say no hasn't got a mind of his own. I used to hate that. That was me. Fucking, sorry. I used to sit in that meeting, I said, if he says, more time to me, you know. And I've gone in the meetings, and they pulled me. There was Scott's Adam, Scott's Norman, and a couple of other lads on. They sat me down in the corner, and he said, right, what do you think you owe your little girl then? And I goes, oh, well, don't talk about my daughter. And they said to me, so you think 18 months sober now, you're going to walk back into her life, she's going to come across the stage with a bouquet of flowers to you and everything like that. I didn't know, see, I thought my dreams, no one knew my dreams. If I'm an alcoholic, we all know to dreams, don't we? And I sat there, right, and I loved this, and they talked about something, and they turned and they said to me, well, what you're going to do, I can't use the language, and they said, what you're going to do, we've heard you, you're a gobby little, you love the last word, you show off, you like attention, you like this, and you like me nothing more than, he said, what you're going to do, you're going to stay out of her life, that's your amends, right? She'd moved on and got another fella. Now, I quite like the idea of intimidating him, and they said, you'll go nowhere near him. Right, and you'll stay out of her life, and in God's own time, it will come right for you. Well, I didn't think it'd take me 20 odd years before I'd actually make contact with that little girl, you know. and it was, it's hard, isn't it? It's very. I thank God for. I don't know. Going for time, I didn't expect to be up here. I'll keep repeating. I thank God for strong sponsorship, and I mean, I don't. 30 seconds. What? Can't be, can it?
No, 15.
15? Yeah. So I thought you had 30, didn't you? Anyway, they sat me down and they said to me, and this is another thing I think you've got to have encouraged. You've got to have courage by the bucket loads, haven't you? There's no good sitting here thinking, oh, they're going to play violins or they're going to do this or anything like that. They hit me with some hard facts, but I had the courage to trust them. I had the courage to believe these people. People say to me, I don't hit the 1 to 12 in the way I should do. I wasn't taught that way. I was taught to live it. I was sat down, you're going to stay out of her life. Right? I can remember going up to Irish John's house one day, and the old football ground was over there, and I'm walking down, and there's all these people. And you know that feeling? I didn't care. You know? And I'm walking down the road, and I remember seeing the floodlights up, and I thought, who's the drunk walking behind me? And what I realised was, it was me crying. Well, I didn't know I was crying, and I was like that. And I went up John's house, and I says, John, what's this all about? Because I couldn't separate what was humiliation and what was punishment and what was recovery, you know. And these people just let me sit in their house and just give me time of day. You know, they didn't care about sleep. Well, they might have done, but I think the thing is, if you're sincere and you're brave, like what Bill said there in the thing, isn't it, about, you know, if you really do apply this program, you really got to sort your past out. There's no, you can't gloss over that. I have to be careful today when I'm around newcomers or year round people, because I can come out and say something that I've got acceptance on, and it's actually, I've got to remember that these poor souls are living with a bag of worms. You know, you don't know, sometimes I could say something like saying being drunk at my father's funeral. You know, someone might possibly don't want to know that, you know, and it's no good saying to someone something like that and just leave them high and dry. You know, people, when they said things to me, they looked after me. You know, I remember I went down the Sunday meeting, it was after I'd done my first chair, and I didn't know, I'd lost the ability to ask for more money. I lost the ability to go and look for digs. I was like locked in myself. And I didn't know how to, I was caught between being a lunatic and raging and having whispers, you know. It's like, if someone said to me, you get the start over there, Bernie, on the yard, right? And I'd say it's 30 quid a day back then, right? Or you'll get 25 a shift if I go across the road and ask for you. I'll take the 25, because I couldn't handle the rejection. I couldn't handle walking up to another bloke and him going to me, nah. Because I didn't know what to do. I was so frightened of myself. I didn't have the confidence. And am I making sense here? Mm. And it's I don't know, you know. I don't really know what I say anymore, really. I really don't, you know. I've had to come to terms with a lot of things in recovery. I don't really, you know. I've seen since. You know, and like I said, I never made contact with my oldest daughter, Sarah, 20-odd years into recovery. I had three children in recovery, and each one of them, we've had scares. Colleen, God bless her, serious operations. Anna was hit by a mate in a car, and Rory had meningitis when he was little. And people don't know me today. People don't know my recovery, right? And people who knew me, right, was when my daughter got hurt in that car accident, the mate, and he had no license, nothing like that, and he had a few quid and he walked on it. The fact that I didn't, he doesn't know who I am, he doesn't know my past, he doesn't know my family, he doesn't know how, what AA got, see, me of old, I'd have had to get him hurt, you know. But AA has taught me that when he set out that morning, right, and this is courage, isn't it? Because my family could turn around and say, what kind of father are you? You know, well, my head would tell me, what kind of father are you? Your daughter's been hurt and you're letting a bloke walking around laughing at you. But what AA taught me is he did not set out that morning for that car. He did not set out to hit my daughter. I believe that in my heart. I believe that when he was up in court and he walked. And this is what AA gave me when the cop was, because I've, they just think you're keeping a low profile. They think you're getting clever. They don't believe you're on a spiritual program and you've got 12 steps and 12 traditions and you're caring about people. And when I was in the court and he walked, and I've gone to walk away, and you know, I've learned to accept that being gentle and that being gentle is not really a humiliation, Bernard. You know, that sometimes being gentle, sometimes letting them have what they want, keeping your mouth shut. And I've got to go out to court, and the coppers there's two or three of them, right? And my first thought, oh, don't give up, my head's gone, I'm being, don't get me a hiding today, you know. And this copper said to me, just keep going, Bernie, you ain't worth it. And that was right back to when I come into AA. Someone called me by my name, Bernard, and that's what AA gave me, Bernard. You know, not that it, that, whatever, Bernard. And I've never, And the people that are on this list and people that died, you know, and people that know me, I feel so good that I could prove these people right. That if they were here today, they would, these people would have come back, that I know they'd say to me about certain things, "See, we knew you were a good one, Bernie. We're so proud of you. You didn't go back into that old world, you know, you didn't. Like most of us, you know, there's anyone that's new in AA, there's no free lunch. You know, your health will catch up. Mine, I went, you know, Jamie, God bless him, his son got killed in Iraq. I went to be a blood donor. I thought in terms like, I thought like, because I've got a credit now, I've got a paid, got a mortgage and this and this and this. I thought, you know, I had a clean bill of health and I'd come into AA, and I got a letter turned around and saying to me that I had Hep C, and that letter basically caused an awful lot. I've got to be careful now because this has been recorded, isn't it? But that was a Kennedy moment. That was a turning point in my life. Everything went completely out the window, you know. People like Lucy, there's a lot of new people in AA that I owe a lot to, right, that really support me when I was on the chemo. I mean, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And I was going through that treatment. I was secretary in the Friday night meeting, and I'd be talking like I am now, like when the distractions happen, you know, the foggy brain, right? Once upon a time, I'd have just gone out and run, and I'd go, you with me? And I'd have gone out. See, the thing is with me, what people taught me was, if I ever got humiliated, someone down the line paid the price. They turned around and they told me about the yets. You come in away, Bernie, you don't sort the yets out, you'll go back out there, right? And someone down the line pays the price. And I could see that. I could see that whenever I got hurt, or imaginary, or anything like that, right? You know, they told me, like, when the children were little, don't slam the door, close the cupboards quietly, don't bring your children up on their instincts, bring your children up there when they see their daddy, you smile, anything like that. You know, and I went, and I've done all this chemo, and it failed. And I didn't keep a drama up or anything like that. But the wonderful thing is, I've got, there's Pete James, all these local people in here, like David there. I'd be there as secretary, and I'd lose it. And no one judged me, you know. They turn around and think, oh, you're angry and all that. What AA is and everything like that. But the wonderful thing about AA, whether it's 1982 for me or 2015, there's a lot of love there. There's an awful lot of love there, you know. But if you're preoccupied in your head chasing this and chasing that, you know, and it's like, I've seen a lot of good people fall by the way for the love of a pound note. You know, I thank God that when I came in, I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing. So when these people are giving me time of day, I couldn't think it's because I can employ them. I couldn't think it's because I can give them a car or anything. I had nothing. Absolutely nothing, you know. So, you know, and they said things to me, no man can serve two masters, Bernard, you know, and they said, you're not doing, you know, it's a spiritual recovery, and it's all in, you know, or you're going to walk. And I knew deep down, and right, am I closing down now, Thomas, yeah?
5 minutes.
Right, I deep down, and I worry for people who sit in AA, and they don't know that their head is their enemy. You know, some people I see, I try and talk, it's like people tell me I'm mad. People say, oh, you're a nutter, this and all that. And I think it's sad, really, that people say that about me, because whether people like it, it's like what I was taught and all that. I might not say particularly get on with someone in AA, but call me naive, but I would phone anyone in AA. If certain individuals phoned me up, right, I think, Christ, they got in their shit, they're phoning me, right? And I'd drop everything to help them. You with me? If Thomas phones me, I think, oh, I've got 5 or 10 minutes to play there, you with me? But that's what AA's worked. It's taught me to work on the bits that. It's nice being nice, isn't it? It's nice sitting with Lucy. It's nice talking to Lucy. You know? But there could be someone over there I don't want to give time of day to. But that's where I've got to go. Because you know? I know how hard it is to stay in these rooms and that, you know? And sometimes you've got to, especially like, as I've got, you know, like Melvin was mentioning this thing, you know? I used to get people, like their children would be drinking. And because I got sober young, they said, Bernie, can you have a word with my little girl she's drinking to, you know? And I spent time, you know, it's like when I go to help anyone that's young, I say a little prayer. Look, I got to really be honest here, because if I go to another funeral, I got to look at their mum and dad, all their children, but I got to know I've been honest. I got to know, I got to be able to look at it. I can't run around and hide like I did when I was drinking. And poor old Melvin, he come over to me and he was talking and he saved me about his daughter, and, you know, and I knew, he knew that I wasn't known, that I couldn't do anything, right? And I just went talking to him, right, can you imagine this now, a man that's done an awful lot of 12-step work, right? You talk to anyone in the area, yeah? His daughter died at the bottom of his garden, crawling up on an overdose. You know? He didn't drink. He didn't hurt anyone. You know, he had dignity, you know? And the thing is, you don't have to talk. Sometimes I sat with Melvin, I said, we didn't talk. What can you say? All you can do is just be there. And that's what people have given me. I think, if someone said to me, what's it been down to? I think it's people being there. I think it goes back to, you know, I don't mean it's any grandiose. I mean, I just think it really is how it started. It's one alcoholic having time for another alcoholic, isn't it? Being kind. And I've got to try and think fast now. You know, it's like, all Hannah's sound and got a little baby. Colleen's sound and got a little baby. I've got to try and think. Sarah's got three little children at me. Rory, I think you'll be sitting up here in a few years' time, Rory, but that's probably fine. And I don't know. I'm gonna. I think the key is you've got to fall in love with AA. I'll pass.
Thank you, Bernard. You know, I've known you for a long time, and it's amazing this old time. It's because there were some things you said about the early days, which I'd never sort of heard you share before, and that's what's so great about this, because it is that keeps the tradition on, really. And it is just, I think, what you say is that there's that thing of falling in love with AA. And anyway, thank you so much. And I just need to say, you were talking about helping youngsters, and you have been a huge help to my daughter. And even though she might have fallen out with you at the moment, I know that because you were saying you had to be honest and say, you know. But in the end, she'll come back. She will. anyway, thank you so much for stepping in. And now we have Robert, I think. You,